Hello, people of OutConf, and welcome to EdgeCases Live. Thank you for bearing with our audio difficulties. We're all very new at this, but I'd like to give a very thank you special to Aaron, who swung in at the last moment and really helped us a lot. She actually knows about things like they're called decibels or something, and like zero clipping or something. Yeah, totally. She's metal. Yeah.
Pop. No, what was it? Bang? No, I'm looking.
So I believe you actually need to do the intro. So
This is EdgeCases. I'm Andrew Pontius, and you just heard Wolf. And so yeah, we're here live. This is Tuesday morning at OutConf. Have you actually been into the OutConf, the main?
Yeah, I have. Yeah.
You have? Oh, yeah. What is it? Is it full? Is it?
What was it when I went yesterday?
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay, so you haven't been there this morning
yet. Not yet.
Was it full yesterday?
Oh yeah, yeah. It was a session after, before the State of the Union. And so, yeah, it was pretty packed. It was packed. Like, we got the last few seats.
Actually, we have to be talking to this, too. Okay. Cool. Yeah, because I was here yesterday afternoon, and we watched the State of the Union here, and that went really well. So, yeah, I think it's a lot of fun. The crowd is maybe a bit sparse. Maybe we should have had this in the afternoon whenever we woke up.
Yeah, I suspect. I was thinking it would be this sparse, on a Thursday morning, but to be this sparse on a Tuesday morning, you guys don't have a drink, so there you go.
Yeah, apparently. Okay, so now normally, in EdgeCases, we would have our topics prepared ahead of time, and we would not tell each other. And we have actually managed to break both of those rules today, because we did tell each other what our topics were, and I haven't prepared at all. So there you go.
Yes, but I have prepared, so We're throwing all the rules out the window here.
So the idea is that we're going to do lightning topics today, about 5 minutes each. And I was actually also hoping that we might get questions from the audience for topics. That was kind of my hope, that you would save me from not having prepared.
Lack of planning,
yes. Yeah. So if anybody does have questions, maybe, indicate that to us, anything you want to hear about. But otherwise, we will let Wolf go first.
Okay, because I actually have a topic. I have three.
You have three topics.
So, my first topic is kind of the idea of what's the deal with competing with Apple. And
are you seriously?
Seriously.
How many people got Sherlock yesterday?
Pretty much. And it was, we strive to be non-topical in EdgeCases here, but it turns out to be somewhat topical, just because it's probably the most Sherlocked keynote I can remember in a long time.
They Sherlocked a lot of people. Actually, I thought they Sherlocked a lot of people last year.
Maybe. It's quite possible. So, if I could remember back that far.
That's right. Every year is the worst year for them.
It's the best year, too. Don't be so pessimistic. Yeah, so I got a brief list here about apps that are Sherlocked. So, it could be... I'm just going to rattle these off and then go into detail what some trends I see here about how to kind of avoid the 800-pound gorilla that is Apple. So WhatsApp, that would be for the enhanced iMessage. That also includes things like Voxer for the push-to-talk. Snapchat, because now you can have your messages have a self-destruct. Hockey app, obviously we saw them buy up the parent company of TestFlight, which is a very interesting development. Usually Apple just comes in, kind of the swoops in, and you find out that you're out of business on the keynote day, where they actually, I forget, do you remember the name of the company who actually ran TestFlight?
No, I mean, I always just knew them as TestFlight. Okay. TestFlight was what they did.
Right. So it's unusual for Apple to actually buy a company out, instead of kind of crushing them. So that's interesting.
Well, no, they buy companies for their services. I mean, Siri was another company.
That's true.
So I totally see them doing that, especially in this case where it would take a lot of infrastructure and a lot of thinking through to make a DevTools service like that.
Yeah. Good point. Alfred, perhaps. The Alfred guys seem kind of resilient on their blog, so hopefully that's a good sign. Ruby Motion, I think a lot of their motion has been sapped from Swift. Sketch, obviously Dropbox, and Reveal. So the real talk here is that Apple is massive, and that if they want your business, they pretty much can probably take it. They had the largest market cap of any company in the world for a long time. I don't know where that is now, but
they've got a lot of money, basically.
Yeah, right.
And they haven't been spending it for the most part, but then now they seem to be starting to spend it a little bit on, say, headphone companies.
There we go. So those were the ones that were Sherlocked. But there's a few examples here that kind of, I find, three trends of things you can do so that the 800-pound gorilla doesn't step on you. And the first one is that find apps or write apps that figure out when Apple's politics aren't fully aligned with their users.
Which means you have to understand Apple's internal politics, but there you go.
Obviously, more understanding is better, but even a superficial understanding is pretty good. An example of this for me is the app Dash, which is a developer documentation viewer. And Dash allows you to not just look at this Objective-C, like documentation, Cocoa documentation, but also it will load doc sets for all sorts of different different development environments, from PHP to Ruby to that's all across the map, so that's not a problem. Now, this is obviously not something that Apple will do. The documentation viewer that's built into Xcode has always been pretty lame. It's been slow, and sometimes it seems to get better, but mostly it's not up to par.
Well, they add features to it, but they never seem to make it better.
That's probably a fair review of it. And so Dash is lightning fast, and before Dash I used Apkido a lot, and there was also a Cocoa document browser, there were a bunch of them, but my point is that Dash is actually a pay-for app, and this is a full-time project, and he's doing an excellent job at kind of going where Apple, either through incompetence or through politics, can't go. And so he has a nice little business that way.
Is there a business in that? Because I would think that it's hard to be the paid app when there's a lesser free alternative.
Oh, don't get me wrong. It's hard in the general case. But I'm talking about if you really do want to compete with Apple, this is where you can play.
Also, should I mention that your 5 minutes are up? How long do we really want to go on this?
I think I'll keep going for this.
Okay.
I have a few more bullet points.
Okay.
And another thing is, with Dash, it was more kind of a politics type thing. But another way to effectively compete with Apple is to find out items that are effectively checkbox items for them that their heart isn't into. So a good example is iCal. You know, it's kind of like one of these things where, like, they did a pretty showy 1.0, and they have a team, full-time dedicated engineers on it, but those engineers are really subsumed with, like, always maintaining compatibility with Google's CalDAV and adding support for Yahoo and, like, a lot of under-the-hood stuff. And also, this kind of veers more into politics of Apple. Apple likes to do, like, these showy releases, right? And so you saw that, these apps that they are always under the gun, that when Apple has a new OS release, which is now yearly, they're the ones that they're going to be shown off at the keynote. So they're always under pressure to look like the new OS. So in terms of, like, really great apps that are smart and really usable, that's exactly what you don't want. And so I personally don't use iCal. I use BusyCal. And BusyCal is, I'm so glad I dodged the leather bullet.
Dodged the leather bullet. That's your title.
It was a great example of how Apple wants to keep up with the cosmetic stuff. And that's where their attention is. To actually have a great calendaring app with great time zone support, allow you to look at months, spawn multiple months, configure reviews. A lot of these kind of really things that really make BusyCal stand out, Apple will never do. So, iCal has always been kind of like an okay app, but BusyCal and BusyMac have built a business on kind of taking this app that is like Apple feels it needs to ship, and they kind of bring it out as a pony during their dog and pony shows, but their heart isn't in it.
You sure it isn't the dog? Is it the dog or is it the pony?
Good question. It's a leather dog. But and it's interesting because that strategy has worked so well for Busy Mac that they're extending that to Busy Contacts. Where like address book are now, well, it used to be address book, but now contacts.app is very much the same thing. It's one of these apps that I've never been extremely pleased with, and they're going to do it upright, and they're not going to be as trendy, and they're actually going to kind of concentrate on making the app the best they can to be used by normals who aren't aligned with Apple's politics and Apple's fad of the day. So that's pretty great. And also, it's along those lines also is like find out when something isn't interesting to Apple. So it's like I would say Apple has different tiers. There's things that they actually care about a lot, like Xcode. I think they care about a lot. They put a lot of attention on there. You disagree? I think there's a lot of focus on there.
I think they had the wrong focus for a long time.
Yeah, but there was a focus to be given.
And it's always funny because people who are coming at it from mobile are comparing it against some of the Java IDEs and saying, "Oh my God, Xcode is so much better." I've always compared it against Visual Studio,
right,
and I still find it quite a bit lacking. And I've been really afraid that Apple would say, "Oh, we're being compared against these other IDEs now. We don't need to be as good as Visual Studio in the areas that Visual Studio is good. Therefore, we can relax a little bit and spend more time in the showy stuff instead of the basics." That has been my concern. I believe that's still my concern.
Okay, fair enough. So, a few examples of apps that have successfully kind of, or maybe not super successfully kind of competed with Apple is, I already mentioned BusyCal. Fantastical seems to be doing pretty well. It's interesting, it's another calendaring app, I just realized. But in terms of natural language inputs and presentation of information, superior to what Apple has, so that works out pretty well. Downcast, which is my preferred podcatcher of choice, if I can use that term.
Such a downer.
There you go. You see, that's the problem with this one mic, is that I need to catch your pun very fast.
So, yes. Yes, you do. Well, and we're talking into two mics at this point.
Yes, okay, good one. And so Downcast is one. Instacast seems fine. I know Marco is working on his own. But the podcast app itself doesn't... It's one of these apps where it's not where Apple isn't interested in it, but their heart isn't in it, or it's one of these things where perhaps the manager has too much power and the manager wants to make it look glossy or shiny or something. So all these podcatchers actually do a very effective job of competing against Apple's own podcast app. DeckSet, which is a new presentation program, it uses Markdown as its slide format. So basically you write a Markdown document and it automatically creates a set of slides for you and it takes what you've done with your theme, standard theme or theme of your choice. And this is a good example of an app that Apple's not interested in at all, not interested in doing. Keynote is great and visual, and they have no interest in kind of the more geeky, gearheady type thing of taking your Markdown documents, which is old, and then try and make them all pretty. That's not something that Apple's interested in. So that app is not going to be stomped on Apple probably forever. Safari RSS, we remember that from a few years back, that we viewed that as Apple tends to have kind of like the attention. Maybe can extend attention deficit disorder to add another A on there, application attention deficit disorder. But they tend to, in order to fill out the keynotes, they're like, oh, look at this great new app, look at this great new feature. And they'll ship a 1.0 of it, and maybe you'll get a rev or two out of it, but then they're kind of on to the next scroll to chase.
They're the magpie of OS and app development.
The shiny new. And so I know that...
They even said to me, and this was not even in the app, this was not even the OS, this was not even apps, this was DevTools. I was told in seriousness that there was a wow factor that we had to fulfill. What the hell? make it fucking compile. That's what I want. And to be fair, more recently they appear to have really gone a long way towards rectifying a lot of that.
Yeah, yeah.
But I was, yeah. Anyway, go on.
Yeah. So Apple tends to chase these squirrels or magpie it or whatever. So I know Brent was waiting for Safari iOS 17. Rumor has it was something like, and boom, it drops. And like, okay, what does this do? It didn't do anything to Dead Newswire. If anything, it maybe got a little bit more attention for RSS back in the day. Yep. So this is a good example where Apple announces something at DubDub isn't necessarily a death sentence, because guess what? They're going to be distracted by the next squirrel soon. And they're not, especially if you're established and you have a good user base, which Brent did, you can probably power through it. It's give and take. I mean, I feel badly for probably the reveal guys, because they're pretty new on the scene.
Yeah.
And I mean, it seems like a great app. I don't use it myself, but I haven't used it myself. But it seems like a great app, and it seems to have a good number of users, but I am worried that maybe they don't have the momentum, the inertia. I hope they do, but that's the fact it's building an interface builder. It's a bad scene, man.
So that's not what to do.
Well, it's a good example of... There's that famous Steve Jobs thing where, and this is a good segue to Dropbox, that Dropbox is a feature, not a company or a platform, whatever it is.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I would say if you can help it, try not to be a feature and try to be a platform. But that's, I don't actually agree with that, because you can totally put out... apps that have an interesting key feature, like Fantastical, is probably user interface and natural language interface is basically a feature, right? And they're doing a good job with it. But if it is a feature that could be easily integrated into Apple's apps, yeah, there's a bigger target on your back.
Well, and we don't know yet. I mean, what's interesting about Reveal is all we've seen so far. Well, at least all I've seen so far is the demo. It's the Apple demo, which made it look really nice. I bet that it won't have the features that Reveal has, and it won't have the not very polished, won't have the details. Like, presumably what's going on with Reveal is they put it out, people pay for it, and then people ask for new features in it. And of course, there's a giant list of features for it, and they get to them as they can. Apple doesn't care about your feature requests. I mean, not so much, anyway. Not as much as this little tiny company does. So they're going to be a lot more responsive to what people need. It may turn out to be that Apple's feature made a really nice demo, but it's not actually all that usable. So the concern would be that Apple decides, out of perversity or whatever, that they will keep iterating on this feature for now, at just enough to kill off the other app, basically, right? And then they'll lose interest. That's what you've got to kind of survive that cycle.
Good point. And Dropbox. So here's a good example of Dropbox shipped before iDisk even. It was pretty early in the game.
Not before iDisk.
Okay.
Not before .Mac. Wasn't there like a Mac tool? Anyway, go on.
Like iTools?
iTools. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not too sure about the timeline there, but Dropbox is a good example of, I think Dropbox basically forced the Apple's hands with iCloud, and that's why we have iCloud Drive today. What do you think?
I think it's definitely a competitor to Dropbox. It might just be that they finally decided we've got to have a foothold in this space. I don't think it's because Dropbox is so successful, because they've been really successful for a long time, I think. And so it's not like, oh my God, we've got to crush them now, because they probably can't crush them now.
Mm.
But I think it's more that they wanted to put it out. It was part of all of what Apple was doing this cycle with trying to react to a lot of competitive threats, I think. It was just part of the whole deal. Because, again, they don't generally tend to say, well, this is one feature we're going to do now. It's like, this is an area we're going to get into right now. So I think there's a bunch of things they did with that, and then their Dropbox competitor was one of them. So some of it is finding when Apple is going to start getting into your area rather than just going to compete with your app.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So do you, so how, so you don't think it sounds like, it sounds like you don't think that the iCloud Drive cuts off Dropbox's air supply?
Well, we'll see. I mean, I think I'm actually much more pessimistic than you, shocker, for the ability of these small companies that want you to pay them for their app.
Sure.
Because you can't just be good. You've got to be better than... You can't just be good. You can't just be better than Apple. You've got to give people something that they're willing to pay for. I think that actually is a pretty good sum up of the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah.
That it doesn't matter what Apple does. You've got to be able to do something that people will pay for, because you're not really paying Apple for whatever they're doing, because you're paying for it as part of a computer, as part of whatever else. If you can do that, you can find that pivot. It's not pivot. What would you call it? That hook to do, then you'll probably be good for a while. If you can't, then you're going to die. I do think that a lot of these companies that are, you know, trying to put their heart and soul into this thing, but again, if you just, you can't convince me to buy it, then I'm not going to buy it, you know, even if it's great. And that, and I'm pretty cheap. Oh, could I admit that? I don't buy that many things, right? So, like a podcasting app, I'm not going to buy a third-party podcasting app. I just don't need it. So it doesn't matter how great you make it, right? So you got to find something that I can use, and that's tough.
So apparently, run your app against Andrew. So see if he'll, yeah, right, you can get money from him, and then you know you're
then you're
golden.
Guaranteed. No. Don't do that. Please don't do that. If you're starting a business model, run it past someone else.
Okay, so do you want to take the next topic, or do you want to use mine as a framework for the next
one?
Well,
we're like half done, but yeah, do you have more stuff to say?
Yeah, well, I mean, the next topic.
I'll do one. And so, you know, we wound up being sort of topical, right? So we're both going to break the... One thing that that I saw from yesterday, a lot of people were tweeting about how Apple... there was one tweet, I don't remember who did it, where somebody said, oh my God, Apple has given us everything we asked for. Everything. We have nothing left to ask Apple for, right? And yeah, wrong. Well, and so but one interesting way I think to look at that, so people said, well, we've been looking for this new language, and if those of you who have followed Syracuse, John Syracuse on Hypercritical and Accidental Tech Podcast and wherever the heck else he is when he talks about this stuff, I mean, he's been, I agree with a lot of what he says about what Apple was supposed to do with languages. And so I think people are coming around and saying, well, they did that now. You're happy, right? You're happy, John, right? We're done. And no, we're not done. And so I think that my response to that at this point is it's a good starting step. And so for people saying, well, my God, there's this new giant language. It has all these wonderful features. You know, what else could you ask for? Are you never going to be satisfied? And, well, yes, I'm never going to be satisfied. But there are definitely some things that are missing from this language that you would want from a brand new language that you're starting from. And I tweeted about it last night. You know, Arc, the fact that they're using Arc, is actually a fairly big disappointment to me. Because, you know, we've talked about Arc. I don't remember what episode number it was. We talked about it a while ago now. And the problem being that, how did you phrase it? That they're building in process into the compiler as opposed to using metadata to solve the problems that you need solved at runtime.
Right.
So there's really a big conceptual issue with it. But more, so that's a conceptual issue with the implementation of it. But, and I think we also might have mentioned it, the idea being that they hid retain release from you. But they didn't get rid of it. So it's a lot like the way Java still gave you no pointer exceptions when there were no pointers in the language, mm-hmm. right? Because everything was actually a pointer. And you had to know what pointers were, you had to know how they worked, but if you were just starting the language and you were a total noob about it, you weren't going to learn that from the language. So you had to go to another language, learn pointers, then come to Java, then do that. Well, that's what they've done with Swift now. They've said, okay, there are no retained releases, we're not going to tell you anything about it. I would actually be curious if it's anywhere in the language spec that they even mention retained release. I mean, I think they must. I'm only about 200 pages into that friggin' 600... No,
the Moby
1300 page book. So I don't know. So yeah, I'm talking on my ass a little bit. But, you know, so they got this thing where you don't need to worry about it, but you do. And when there are edge cases about manual retain release, you need to know exactly how it works. You need to know exactly what the behavior is, the behavior in normal case and in unusual cases. You need to know all that stuff, and they've hidden it. So I got in a little bit of an argument on this on Twitter about that, that, you know, my main people said, well, why is GC better for this? Why is garbage collection better? Because you have to know garbage collection really well, too, if you're going to use one of those languages. Well, yes, but then the garbage collection isn't hidden. It's a visible, fully explained feature of the language, and you're not getting that with Swift. But I totally understand why they did it, because this was another half step. That, you know, the half step of ARC itself, the half step of all the language syntax sugar that they got with Objective-C 2.0 and all that other stuff. They aren't going to do something totally new that's going to have a huge number of bugs and is going to be, you know, maybe a flop and all that. You know, they're not going to do Rhapsody again. Well, not even Rhapsody. What was the one before that?
Rhapsody, yeah.
Well, what do they like Pink, whatever, all the other things that they tried before they bought.
Oh, right, yeah.
Right, they're not going to do something from scratch
Copeland,
that could fail.
Yeah.
Copeland,
yeah.
Basically, right. They're going to, well, even Copeland, bad example. Anyway, they're gonna keep iterating on what they have to get where they really want to go. And I think the mistake some people are making in the euphoria of all the stuff we got from them yesterday was to say, well, we're here. We've made it. You have not made it. And that's good. That's good because that means they can ship this in far less time than we were thinking. You know, Syracuse was thinking, oh my God, it's going to be 10 more years. It's not going to be 10 more years. It's going to be now. So what's the other thing? It's garbage. Retain release was something that I really wanted to see and that we don't get rid of, that I really didn't want. You know what I mean? And then there was something else about it. Well, I think it's still very C-like in it. There was something else. I'm not going to be able to remember it. But it feels to me like a lot of what they do in this is a reaction to what they have now. Like, it's not really something new. It's very much let's solve the specific problems that we had before. So they put a huge amount of effort into solving null pointers. Right, have you seen anything about this? It's really interesting that there are no pointers
right.
anymore. But it's not like Java. Java did the thing where you don't see the pointers, but it's still all pointers.
Yeah.
They make it very clear that like if you that the object references are not either a thing or nil,
mm-hmm.
as they are in Objective-C and in Java.
They're always valid.
If it's a reference to a thing and you haven't specifically said it could be a reference or they don't want to say nil. They want to say nil at all.
Okay.
But it's either a reference to the thing or this other thing, and it's very there's a lot of logic put in place to say that you can't screw that up intentionally.
Okay.
And you know, I was reading all this stuff and I think, oh, this is very much a reaction to it. Instead of saying, well, yeah, just don't, you know, we have a totally new concept. Because the other thing, you know, I learned a little bit about Haskell. I have a book. I haven't finished the book. And it's totally different. Like, it's really very, very different than the mindset of C-based languages. This is not very different. This is not something totally new concepts. This is very much an extension of C-based languages better. This is a better iteration of C-based languages. And so when you think, well, this is going to be what we use for the next 10, 15 years, well, then we're still basically using a C-based language, just a C-based language without a lot of the garbage of C. So yes, it gets rid of a lot of that, and that's good, but we're still thinking in terms of a C-based language. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually a little surprised that I'm not getting more complaints from people about that. Maybe it's the euphoria. Maybe it's the drinking. Who knows? And then, you know, so now today, there were a few tweets where people said, oh, I've looked through the document, and now I'm looking at, I'm you know, some nitpicks and other things about it. But this is still, you know, this is an iterative approach from a giant company which just can't be really creative about this. Like, they're being creative in the corners, and they're being creative in how they're iterating from one thing to another, but it's not a giant leap. It's just a better version of Objective-C. So, I'm excited about the language. I'm gonna rewrite my home project in this language, which should be fun. But I'm actually probably more excited about what's gonna get released a year from now, or 2 years from now, because this isn't the end. I think we've clearly seen this from Apple. They're gonna keep working on it. The things that they do care about, they keep working on. So like you know, you're saying that there's something that they don't care about anymore.
Right.
Like, what's an example of an app that they've always cared about? I mean, God, maybe there isn't an example. they care about iOS. They care about.
I think, you know.
No. I don't think so.
Okay.
It's hard, but there are things like DT especially. There are things where they keep improving. They keep improving IB, right? After the huge problems that came about with when they integrated IB into Xcode, they have been adding a huge number of new things to it. It's very clear that they're going to keep focusing on it.
Yeah.
As opposed to like features, I shouldn't even mention it. I'm going to mention it. Like refactoring, which has gotten no love at all since I worked on it. And you know, it's very clear they just don't care about it right now. They're about other things, but IB they keep improving on, and so I think you know they're going to keep improving on the language. It's very clear that that's a big part of what they do. Of course, they've got a huge Clang group now,
right.
So you know they got to keep those guys you know off the streets. So you know again. Mostly excited about the next steps after this, how they're going to make this the language we really want for the next 10 years after this, because I think they will. I mean, if they don't do GC in the next, well, I shouldn't even say stuff like this. If they don't do something like GC in the next couple of years, again, I'll be pretty disappointed, because I think they've got to know that they just can't keep stumbling along with retain release. It's going to be a huge, drawback with new developers. And I think like Apple's gotten a lot of success right now because iOS is so successful. As Android gets to be more on par, not necessarily with quality or anything like that, but with developers starting to develop first for Android, I mean, I think this is Apple's first salvo in like saying, well, you know, we really have finally got to start keeping up with the Joneses because we've got some real competitive pressures that I think they're going to keep moving that stuff along because, you know, developing in Java, you know, Java has its problems, right? But it doesn't have that problem. And I think they're going to see that as a threat. So how much time did I take up there? We're at 32 minutes.
Okay. Well, two things. And you say that you're the pessimist, but here you are about being all optimistic. I know who this is next to me.
Yes.
The other thing that I was reminded when you were talking about it, the improvements there and how developers are interpreting the improvements, is like I think it was a Guy Steele quote who said that Java dragged C programmers halfway to Lisp. And so it's like...
I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, so it's like I get the feeling that maybe Swift drags us another halfway towards Lisp. But it might be a Zeno's paradox thing where we never actually get all the way to Lisp.
Yeah. Asymptomatically approaching.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Is it Lisp, though? I mean, I don't actually know Lisp. I know Scheme a little bit. I mostly just remember the parens. God, the endless parens. So I don't know. I mean, it's just modern stuff, you know. And again, Syracuse has talked about this, that commercial languages are so far behind in the conceptual idea. You know, the stuff coming out of universities is just so far ahead of what we've got. And so again, this is getting us better and closer, but still, you know, still there's a huge gap.
Agreed, yeah. Okay, so for my next topic, I want to talk about application extensions and Nubus.
What?
So it was, so obviously one of the big news is the
topical.
I know, a topical. I need a little. Thank you for the topical smackdown there. So the big news is application extensions, which is very interesting. That
it is very interesting.
It's really a restructuring of iOS applications as we know them to be a bit more components, which I know very little about Android. But from what I understand, Android apps are actually kind of composed like as multiple. Screens that end up kind of jumping from one to the next, and yeah. So that's how things like Intents work and Contracts. Well, Contracts is a Windows thing.
I only visited France for a day.
Okay, so you just had the croissant and left.
Pretty much. Very very tasty.
I tried to do a dessert thing because of Android. But anyway,
moving on.
Yeah, and so with. And now that we have frameworks and dynamic libraries in iPhone apps, this is the apps are being more kind of broken down and more composable, and where they can interoperate with each other. And this is not nearly as far as I wish we actually were or where we were going. I'd much prefer like persistent objects at a very fine grained level type stuff, but That's, I know it's a pipe dream, at least for now. But anyway, it's at least we're kind of moving on there. And it's very interesting to me because like this reminds me very much of the Mac 128K, and it also reminds me of like the tension between kind of like the duality that Apple has. So I think it's like no accident that the two Steves have founded Apple. Like they're two, you know, they're kind of like they're really good archetypes of their belief systems, of their priorities. We're from the Wozniak kind of crazed engineer, do things for the fun of it and inject fun into everything. From, you know, Jobs being, you know, interested in the Mac in a suit. And, you know, when he came to Apple, he drained the six colors, right? He created the monolith. And we move all the fun, right? Because we are this unified thing that's so cool, so stylistic. And the thing I really loved about Apple in probably the late 80s and 90s is that they were both things. They had the elegance and they had the fun.
Beige computers, definitely elegant.
Well, I mean, don't get me wrong. It's when the Jobsian archetype, you know, took over, we got a lot more bang for our buck. Yeah. But you also have to compare like Macs of the time compared to PCs, and they were looking pretty good. Snow White was looking pretty good. But so it's interesting. So like the 1984 Mac is very Jobsian archetype, right? It's control, it's stylized, and
it's an appliance.
It's appliance, information appliance, which I'm a big fan of. But there were big issues with it. And this is, unfortunately, I think the duality kind of leads to a false dichotomy with that Apple. So the Jobsian kind of ethos of this is that you have this stylized machine that's beautiful and we're gonna screw it shut with Torx screws. You can't open up, it's not expandable, because we know, you know, we will give you this magical box and we will give you the whole widget and you don't need to open, what's the problem? And what's interesting is that on kind of like the Wozniak kind of archetype part that was part of Apple, it was that, you know, the engineers put hacks into the original 128K Mac that it could be expanded to 512K fairly easily. And they did it behind the scenes because they know Jobs actually said, do not do this. And so they snuck that in.
Easter egg.
Well, yes, the best type of Easter egg, where you actually get to have a more expandable machine. And the same thing with the Mac 2, which is the first expandable Macintosh. It you know, broke the mold, because before that, you know, the Mac, you bought them as they were. You know, they're the one widget, and that was the end of the story. And again, it was ordered by Jobs not to build it, right? And Jean-Louis Gasset went behind the scenes, had the Reno project behind the scenes, and kicked off the Mac 2 project. And obviously that came to fruition, and that introduced the expandable Macintosh that had the new bus slots. So this is very interesting, because I believe the Mac 2 shipped after Jobs left Apple, was kicked out of Apple. And now we have application extensions, now that Jobs is no longer at Apple.
Oh, God, yeah, no, I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah, and there's also, there's a level of playfulness, arguably too much of a playfulness in the keynotes, that when you had the monolith Apple, the Apple dreamed of color, that, you know, we liked what humor there was in the keynotes with Jobs, because there was so little of it.
It was a seasoning.
Yeah, right. A good way to put it.
Although, come on, Phil Schiller dropping from the whatever that was thing onto the mat. I mean, we might be overgeneralizing things here.
But keep in mind that Schiller is also pre-Jobs, and he was of the old Apple.
Yeah, all right.
Pre-Jobs return.
Right, right.
Yeah. So it's... So I think we're getting a like the Wozniak side of Apple is kind of making a comeback here, and this for me is is really like what I want. I always wanted the Easter eggs, the magic, and I also wanted a fantastically engineered machine that cared about extensively about user interface and style. And so I'm extremely pleased at kind of the direction we're going. And it's like I said before, it's a false economy. We don't have to, like, you don't have to say I'm on Team Jobs or I'm Team Woz. Like, you can be both. And Apple's, you know, flips and flops on this and arguably goes one way or the other too much. But, in, you know, coming out of the colorless Apple, I feel like we're kind of overdue to kind of, like, re-embrace the engineering side and the fun side again. And maybe get more openness back in Apple. And a good example of this is the lifting of the NDA at DubDub, right? And, like, you know, when the original iPhone SDK came out, like, you were not even supposed to be able to talk to it amongst your coworkers.
That's right. That was so ridiculous.
So I'm inclined to kind of lump that into the Jobs in ethos, the Jobs in duality of Apple. But on the other side is obviously the freewheeling, give the circuit board diagram to the Apple II to everyone who buys it type of Wozniak ideal. So I think a mix is ideal, and maybe the fuel ratios be kind of off as they go. Might get some bubbles in the fuel lines there, I don't know. But overall...
As long as it doesn't explode.
Sure. Yeah. And so they'll stutter, they'll have issues, but overall I think it was a big positive sign, and I hope they continue more to embrace the Wozniak side.
Do you want to talk about that tweet from last night? You know which one I'm talking about?
No, you go.
Well, I mean, we got a tweet last night where someone was saying, "Well, with all these changes at Apple, would you be interested in restarting C4?"
Oh yes. No comment.
Yeah, okay. Sure. That's what I figured. But the thing for me is, I can see where you're coming from with that, but I think I disagree, because I see the changes they're making now as either a personality driven in certain cases, and I'm not going to get into too many details about that, but and also a response to competitive threats. Apple really almost never does anything at the large corporate level without doing it for some strategic reason. I always strategic and tactical, I always get those confused. Without doing it for some reason that has to do with the health or the growth of the company. And I think a lot of this is a competitive response to Android. They could have done a lot of this stuff years ago. I mean, it's 7 years that the iPhone's been out. They're getting to system extensions now. They could have started with it. They could have done it halfway through. They're doing it now because I think they're seeing more concern about that, you know, their growth rate is slowing. Android is still going through the roof. Whether that means there's really, you know, I don't know all the details of exactly what their competitive scenario is with Android. But my impression is, I mean, that more projects are having Android versions sooner, I think. I could be wrong, but that's what I think. I think that's going to continue. And I think Apple needs to find ways to fight back against that. And I think that the big, well, it seemed like they were leaving a lot of dev improvements on the table. I can't believe I'm using that phrase. I hate that phrase. For a long time, and I still think, I actually still think that, so in any case, I think it's coming from competitive pressures, which is why I don't think it's actually a big change in philosophy. I don't think it's the idea that, hey, we're going to open up the OS now, because it's still actually really locked down. They're giving you more avenues to do more things, but you still can't do anything. You still don't have the same ability to hack on it that you do on the Mac,
right.
And that I don't think is ever coming back. I don't think they're ever going to give developers that kind of freedom. Of course, Android has that freedom right now. So they're going sort of towards it. They're going as far towards it as they can. But they're never going to reach it. You know, they're never going to let you just install your own apps without getting it from their app store. I still think, like... I'm going to cough.
Don't worry, we'll edit that out.
Yeah, maybe. The list of things they're going to do to improve the app store were vague and very short. If they actually do improve the App Store to the extent that we want them to, like to make search better so you can actually find your app, you can't find anybody's app right now, and other things. Actually, search was pretty much the only thing I remember from what they said.
Yeah.
I still think the race to the bottom is still there, and if you don't address that, you're still not actually making your developers' lives that much easier. Because if you have a wonderful new language and you still can't make money on your apps, then, you know?
Yeah.
And if you still have to go through them to get anything you want out of the store, to make your money off the store, then you're still in that same place. You're still begging Apple for the scraps. And I don't think that's changed. I don't think they've mentioned that that's changed. I think it's just, you're still in the cage. They put a little rug in the cage. Right? So I mean, it's better, and it's still better. It's, you know, I like rugs. I like being able to sleep on a rug instead of sleep on the bars. But I don't see a big change, actually. I see them responding to competitive pressures. Mm-hmm. So I would restart C4. But, of course, it's not mine to restart. So there you go.
Thank you. No pressure there. Okay, so we have about 10 minutes left. So mind if I kick in with my third final?
Sure. Well, I don't have any topics anyway.
Okay,
I've already gone through that.
Okay. So it's very much along the same lines, but with a different look at things.
Coming at it from a different angle.
Yeah. I feel that over the past 4 years that there's been an evolution of Apple's relationship with its developers. When I started programming the Mac, Apple actually would ship out a magazine of developer tools and things like a common Lisp implementation that it included that you need to have a Nubus card for that had accelerator, hardware accelerators.
You're a Nubus, man.
Apparently it's a Nubus episode. Who knew? Who knew Nubus?
You should have
gotten that one, yeah. But it was like that's Apple, you know, in the late 80s, right? Is where they actually not only did they, you know, tolerate other developers selling and making developer tools, they actually would advertise them saying, "Look at our platform, look how our ecosystem is rich. Like you can write in Pascal, you can write in C, you can write in Lisp. You can write in Scheme, all these different environments. Even had like ProGraph, which was like visual one. And I remember looking at that catalog, I was wowed at it. And for better or for worse, Apple obviously decided that, you know, even MetroWorks was a threat, and that they wanted the control of having the one one IDE to rule them all. And so that was definitely a shift of power. But it's interesting because, like, even when Apple decided that we will own the developer tools, you could tell they still didn't have as much power because we had things like Coco Java. And that was this was a good example where Apple wasn't saying, they weren't able to force their hand. They weren't saying, with the iPhone, they said, guess what? Objective-C, that's what you got. That's what you're going to learn.
They were a 20-pound gorilla at that point.
There we go. I like the weight there. And with the... And so, obviously, Apple gained a lot of upper hand when they were able to, with the iPhone. And this even before the iPhone, Objective-C basically became like, you know, that was the way to write Mac apps. And I think...
They supported things like Python and Ruby.
That's true.
And then the iPhone was really the change.
For me, Arc is an example of a power shift. I used to... When I would go across the street to the Moscone here, I could go in there, I could look at the escalators... And I would know about 75% of the people going up and down. Now when I go in there, there's so many new people. There's such a mass influx of raw developer talent. I don't know most people. I go into parties, and I'll see one or two of the people I know, of the old-timers. So there's been this massive developer influx, obviously because of the iPhone. But what's interesting is that, you know, these are developers who have their own ideas of what's good. And They're not an 800-pound gorilla. They're probably maybe just like a basket of kittens, but they're a huge basket of kittens. And I mean, it's getting
like 100 kittens.
Yeah,
like 1,000 kittens.
Probably like 1,000 kittens. I mean, and these kittens are just crawling all over Apple.
They bite. They're
nipping all over.
Yeah.
And so I mean, it's not something that you can ignore. These tidal wave of kittens.
Metaphors. We win with the metaphors.
And so I believe ARC was because of this tidal wave of new talent. It was like this was our retained release was something that the tidal wave of kittens really had issues with and was a real sticking point to them. Back in the old days when we were just when everyone was writing macOS 10.2 apps, the developer talent pool was not only smaller, but the dynamics were different. That Apple was the root node, that it was a center of gravity. And what Apple said...
It was the NS object.
Okay, it was the NS object. That works out pretty well. And so you just did what Apple said. But with this massive influx of different people coming from different platforms and all that, the dynamic changed where Apple had to change. Like, they just couldn't say, retain release, learn it, use it, love it. Apple actually realized that that the center of gravity was moving away from them, and that they had to make some concessions. They had to reach out to make things better for their audience, its developers.
They were running alongside the moving train.
And for an 800-pound gorilla, it's not used to having to give up its seat, or at least shift over a little bit. So this is a pretty important thing. And I think that also plays into Swift. That a lot of people have complained about Objective-C for a long time. And I think without the massive influx of developer talent, I don't think Swift would have shipped. That I was, since day one, I was complaining about Objective-C, and a lot of guys did. But that said, Apple was the center of gravity, and people and most developers were like, oh yeah, this is do what Apple says. And so us kind of lone voices in the wilderness, like, yeah, he's crazy. What's wrong with him? But now I've shown you all.
Lone wolves, you mean?
Lone wolves, thank you. Mm-hmm. And so we have these advancements that, like Swift and ARC, because of the shift of the center of gravity. And really everyone wins here. Like, the tidal wave of kittens, they're getting the things, the sweets.
They're getting a warm saucer of milk.
I was just going for the milk, yeah. And obviously, kittens can be annoying, but they're very cute, so Apple gets lots of the very cute kittens.
I think that's the end of the metaphor.
okay, well, I'll stop now. And also, things like AltConf itself, and things like CocoaPods. Like, this is also examples of shifting center of gravity away from Apple. Like, Apple is, like, for me, WWDC is almost like Objective-C 1.0 in terms of everyone's complaining about it, and there are some obvious solutions that Apple, either because of political reasons or incompetence, isn't executing on. And so what you have here is that because there's so much more life force in the Apple developer community now, we can do things like put on a parallel conference right across the street. This is not something that was possible before the tidal wave, before all the new blood came in. I wanted to do something like CocoaPods, back in the macOS 10.1 days. And there just wasn't, there was not enough community power there to do so. And obviously, this CocoaPods is something that politically Apple does not want at all.
They don't want it at all, I'm positive of that.
And yet, it's not only did it get booted, but it seems to be thriving. And so it's going to be very interesting to see Apple's move in CocoaPods, whether they're going to just like let it be its own thing, like Mode Generator, or if they're going to try to subsume it.
They're going to Sherlock it.
You think they're going to Sherlock it?
I will bet money they're going to Sherlock it within the next 2 years.
So basically, kind of like the bots thing, where they didn't like Jenkins,
It's like anything. It's like, it's like Reveal. It's like whatever. It's they take their time to come up with their own version, but why don't you finish?
No, you come.
Because my take on this is, Apple has never wanted, at least as far as the Jobsian age is concerned. They've decided at the beginning of that they didn't want to be beholden to anyone. They didn't want to rely on any partners who could take over. In the same way that the big app companies, Microsoft and Adobe, basically they had to run the new version of their OS past them. Rhapsody didn't get built because no one was going to port their apps to it. And so they said, from then on, we're going to make it such that the people we deal with are not in a position of power compared to us. That's been the rule, the goal from when Jobs came back until today. I think that Apple's still doing that. And you know, they want the developers on the App Store atomized. They don't want giant developers on right. the App Store that they have to kowtow to. They have to do things for that they don't want to do. They, you know, they have these giant developer conferences, but it's actually still a really tiny developer conference, right? It's they don't want to make it any bigger. So I think the two examples of this are CocoaPods, so it's good you mentioned it, and the plugins that people are making for Xcode.
Like things like Alcatraz?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think the idea being that people just got so fed up with Apple not providing the stuff that they wanted, that they went ahead and did it. And I think a lot of it is, and we've talked about this, maybe not online, I think a lot of it is the Ruby community coming in. A lot of developers who were Ruby developers who were used to not having an 800-pound gorilla.
They're known malcontents, those Ruby guys.
Known malcontents, yes, very nice. They were used to building their own systems. And whereas the old guard here were used to saying, well, we'll wait for Apple to do it because they would just stomp us anyway. And so I think that's what actually happened. I know there are a lot of CocoaPods folks at AltConf. I do think you know, they're putting a lot of work into it. You know, they're trying to solve a problem. I actually do think that that Apple is, they don't, Apple doesn't want this. They seriously don't want anyone else taking that kind of power from them. They're going to want to make their own system, or they're just going to want to tell us don't do it. And so it's this great tension. I mean, they're not going to say anything about it, but they're going to try to kill it. And it's just, you know, it's
well,
kind of
not necessarily kill it, just make their own.
Well, yeah, they're going to try to compete.
All right.
They're going to try to outcompete it by coming up with their own thing that will be integrated into their own systems that will make it not necessary to have CocoaPods anymore. I'm positive that they're going to try to do that. I mean, they might try to buy it, but it's not really a company.
It's open source, right? Yeah.
And I also am pretty sure that they hate, I mean, I know that they hate the third-party plugins, because what they don't want is an Adobe. They don't want a update system. They don't want a plugin that people need to have such that they can't change Xcode anymore because it would break these third-party systems. Mm-hmm. And that hasn't, that's not going to change. And I just, so in some ways I think that Apple is getting its just rewards for this stuff because they haven't done so many of these things that you know, the outside world does have, you know, as you said, it's a bit of a center of gravity shift, but it's not just, oh, Apple's going to let this happen. No, they're going to try to kill it. And it's just a matter of when.
Well, this would be a characteristically depressing ending of our show.
Yes, well, you know, we have our traditions.
It is good to know that even if we record live, that we still have our traditions. Okay, so that does it for me. Anything for you?
No, I think that's it. Thank you for the, 10 or so people in the audience who are listening to us right now. We appreciate that.
Yes.
And we thanks for, to AltConf for setting us up for this recording.
Yes. And thanks again, Aaron, for rescuing us, our audio. Thanks so much.
We'll see you next time.